right, so I will turn things over to Richard then.
Okay, there we go. Well, here we are, the 10th precept, the finale, or is it? Hey, this is Zen. There's no beginning, no end. So, you know, that's just how it works out. I kind of want to start off with just kind of my taking Jukai and how that all came about. I've been attending Brightway for a while, and I kind of figured, well, that's what you do, right? I mean, you take Jukai, that's kind of the next step. And so I sat with Domio and Sanzen and told her I didn't really know why I was doing this, but it just seemed like that was the thing to do. And I can't really remember what her response was, but it just kind of came down to, why not? So that's just how it was for me. I find that things kind of evolve on an intuitive level sometimes, and it's not always really useful to analyze why. You just go ahead with it. So that was kind of that's how I ended up doing Jukai, and you get that great Wagesa. So I mean, yeah, there you go, it's the full package. But anyway, that's my story with getting started. Now I've got, why am I doing the 10th precept? Well, I'm blaming this on Bruce, because I originally was going to do don't be stingy, and Bruce was going to do the 10th precept, but this was prior to the pandemic, and he had a prior engagement, so he convinced me that we should switch. So I'll get you for that, Bruce. So that's just how it worked out. So actually, I'm kind of glad it did. It's strange how things work out like that. And this precept has really resonated with me. I'm a little bit, I haven't quite, it seems kind of late in the game to say I haven't really quite figured this out, how I'm going to go about this. But when you do this, you try to teach a precept, and the longer you have, it's actually worse than not having much time at all, is that you start pulling in all this information. I call it mining Dharma gold, and I mean, you're looking for great stuff, and you just end up with this pot, and quite frankly, I become overwhelmed with it all. I become kind of confused. So I'm a bit of a quandary where to go with it all. And I had asked somebody that told them of my dilemma, and they said, well, you should just dump it all and go from your heart. Just see how that goes. And that seemed a little scary to me. So I'm going to do kind of a hybrid. I've got some stuff I came up with that I'd really like to share. And then I'm going to try to dig down inside and tell you what it really is, how it is for me on a personal level. So one of the books that I always go back to is The Mind of Clover, Robert Aitken's. And I'll just read a little, it's kind of his introduction paragraph, the 10th grave precept, not defaming the three treasures. And in the book, he says the three treasures are fundamental to Buddhist practice, and apart from their sectarian tone, fundamental to all religious practice. They are, of course, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, enlightenment, the truth, and harmony. not defaming them, is the path of understanding them fully, keeping them clear in our minds and presenting them in our lives. God, what a great snapshot. In fact, I don't know if I need to say anything else. I mean, that pretty well. but I guess I'm expected to say a few other things. So I will continue on with some of the other things I came up with. This is also something that Robert Aitken had written. It's from his book, Taking the Path of Zen. It is essential at the beginning of practice to acknowledge that the path is personal and intimate. It is no good to examine it from a distance as if it were someone else's. You must walk it for yourself. In this spirit, you invest yourself in your practice, confident of your heritage, and train earnestly side by side with your sisters and brothers. It is this engagement that brings peace and realization. And I just thought that was quite sweet. Part of the time, precepts become rules, become very dry, and for me, they have to come down inside of you to really, really work with them, really, really make them. You have to make them your own, and I'm sure you've noticed by now that often the precepts are stated differently by different people, and basically they're same, but they have different emphasis, and they kind of come out a little bit different. But I did find one thing on my tricycle article. This is a Great Plains Zen Center, a discussion of the 10th precept. I kind of liked what they said. And I'll read part of this. Is we explore the last of the 10 grave precepts. Do not speak ill of the three treasures, or do not disparage the three treasures. The last precept is a good summary of all the others. It brings us back to what is at the very core of our practice, the three treasures, the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. These, of course, are not three separate things. They are aspects of one thing. And what is that one thing? That's the big question in Zen. What is that one thing? It is our life. Our life has the three aspects of the three treasures. The Buddha treasure means that our life is the life of the awakened one. Who is awake? That's the Buddha treasure. Our life unfolds exactly according to the law of cause and effect. That's the Dharma treasure. Simply, it's that oranges grow on orange trees and strawberries grow on strawberry bushes. If we throw hard, the ball will go across the yard. If we throw with little force, the ball will only travel a few feet. It seems more complex, of course, because we can't see all of the interwoven causative factors. We see only a tip of the iceberg. So what results often seems to be a surprise, unpredicted. Because things are always changing and there are so many factors interacting, like Indra's net, no two things are ever the same. Each is unique. That's the Dharma treasure. Each thing apparently uniquely according to its unique chain of cause and effect. The Sangha treasure is the connection. As much as we think and act as though we were, we are not separate from all else. We are all connected in this web of cause and effect, practicing together, acting from our collective wisdom, is the manifestation of the Sangha treasure, that connectedness. And I really like the way it kind of pulled it all together. It's we tend to like to put things in these little boxes and have them all separated out. I, what was it? That old saying, the Christians love their God and the Buddhists love their list. And so it's the 10 this, the 5 this, the 4 this. And, you know, and it's just like, I'm not a list guy. So it doesn't resonate with me, but that's just, the way I am. So anyway, moving, let's see. Had a couple other things here. Yeah, this I came across this one. I didn't like the whole article, but it was they expressed the 10th precept as experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. I kind of like that. And they had also a comment by Dogen, to expound the Dharma with this body is foremost. The virtue returns to the ocean of reality. It is unfathomable. We just accept it with respect and gratitude. Sounded really good to me. There's this is from the precept study book from Dharma Ring. And one of the other, and we had in our chant tonight, we went over this. In the realm of the one, holding no concept of ordinary being and sages is the precept of not defaming the three treasures. To do something by ourselves without copying others is to become an example to the world. And the merit of this becomes the source of all wisdom. Criticize nothing, accept everything, respect the Buddha, unfold the Dharma. That one always kind of, always threw me for a loop. Do something by ourselves without copying others. How do you do that? It seems like, whenever you come up with, someone else has already thought of it before you. So how do I do that? And it occurred to me that doing the thing we do by ourselves, and it really isn't copying others, is our practice. Our practice is very personal. It is for me. I don't think anybody has the same practice. And I think that is the thing that is something that you have that you're not copying from anybody. And Kyogen had a quote of Dogen's that says, when we wish to teach and enlighten all things by ourselves, we are deluded. When all things teach and enlighten us, we are enlightened. To do something by ourselves without copying others is the heart of what he's saying here. To be taught by all things. That was very astute. But the, which is kind of some of the stuff that I found, but then I like I said, I think when you get down to it, what's inside of you? I was working with Bruce and he'd sent me a copy of his presentation and I read it over, and I made a comment to Bruce. I said, but Bruce, where's Bruce in all of this? And so I think now I have to turn that around and come back to me and say, where's Richard in all of this? You know, turnaround's fair play. What is it? What really resonates in this? I came up with to put the three treasures in the prison of my conceptualization. For me, that's to defame the three treasures. What is it that exists within the context of this moment? Am I trapped within the frozen construct of my mind how do I maneuver through the ambiguities of life? The precepts provide a framework which allows me to interact with love and compassion, finding the truth of the moment, stepping past the demands of my ego, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Gosh, how do you explain all that? Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. I mean, it's huge. I don't know. I came across something Suzuki Roshi said in the, I think I love everything that Suzuki Roshi says, but he said during a talk that some of us wanted to be Zen masters, and that this was very foolish. He said that he wished he was like us, just starting out. Maybe you think you are green apples hanging on a tree, waiting to ripen so that you can be Buddhas. But I think you are already ripe, perfect Buddhas now, ready to be picked. And I'd always hear they saying, well, you know, your Buddha nature, maybe you are Buddha. And I was like, oh, no, not me. I couldn't be a Buddha. But it's a hard thing to pin down. I know I was at Sesshin it was the hot summer Sesshin, I call it. The sweaty fans running Sesshin out there at, I can't remember the name of the place. But and I remember one, it was hot, sweaty. I'm sitting there. I think it was a posture adjustment we had. And so, you know, I'm looking around and everybody's settling back in. And of course, you're supposed to be staring straight ahead, but I kind of look sideways and I look down there and there's everybody sitting. And it's just like, there it is. There's Buddhas. They're all sitting in a row. And it was a weird thing. It just comes to mind. And I think that's how it is. You know, it's probably something that I come up with things that I run out of words to explain. And sometimes it's just the image that says that for me. And for me, that was Buddha. That's what sticks in my mind. And then there's the Dharma. What's the Dharma? I think Aiken said that the Dharma's truth. And it's the teachings of the Buddha. But what is truth? What is that? You know, is it your truth today? Will it be your truth tomorrow? To me, the Dharma is all the possibilities, everything that could possibly, it's the things you like, the things you don't like. It's all the things that come up. It is our life. And I can't get my arms around it. I really can't find within my gut. I really can't find the words for it, but it's just something that, gosh, I know it's there, but, I don't know. But truthfully, when I came to practice, I was mostly interested in Sangha. That was, I think, probably the first time I talked to Domio. I was saying what I wanted was a spiritual family. I had, this came up when Mom had cancer, and I watched her, and she was a Christian, and had her church and this family around her, and it was such a precious thing, and I wanted that. You know, I mean, the Buddha, Dharma, and all that, okay, you know, I'll get there, I guess, sometime. But it was Sangha was that's what really drew me into this practice. And, you know, I gotta say, Zoom's okay, but I just miss sitting with you guys. I miss being in that room. There's energy there. There's just all this, and I'm like, I'm having withdrawal pains here. I got to tell you the truth. I go over to water the plants there at Brightway, and quite often I just go inside the sangha and I'll just sit for a while, and that's okay, but it's just not the same. So it isn't one thing. It all kind of goes together. Dharma, Buddha, sangha, it becomes, in my gut, it becomes one thing. And and Domio also told me that sangha is very hard. And I thought, well, it's not so difficult, but doggone it, it is. It's just, it becomes family, and family's a hard thing to deal with sometimes. but y'all become my teachers, you know. It's there is this wisdom that takes place in the sangha, and maybe we go for a walk someplace, maybe a cup of coffee at the donut shop, right, Bruce? Or, there's just so many ways to interact with sangha, but then sometimes it frustrates you, and that's a teacher too, because what is that? Why am I frustrated? What's going on? But it's, I think when you become in relationship with sangha, you have to open up to all those possibilities. You have to be vulnerable. You have to trust all that. And I do. It just kind of grows that way. And I sit with a couple sanghas. And I love you guys, but I wander around. That's kind of always been my practice. And I end up in different sanghas. And I think it's our practice that kind of cements it all together. You know, it's this sangha, and they're different. I don't know. That's just kind of the way it works out for me. And this kind of took off on this tangent. It's kind of neat, because it's kind of the way I wanted it to go. I wanted to drop all that stuff that I had gathered up. So I don't know if I've really got anything else to say. The one thing that came to my mind when I was working on this is the verses on faith mind. When I tried to pick out what it is and everything, the thing that sticks in my mind is when they talk about the when you set up what you like against what you don't like, dislike, it's the disease of the mind. And that was just like, yeah, it's just, I like the way this guy talks about it, I don't like the way this guy talks about it. And it was just like, man, I'm going, that's where I'm going with this. You know, I'm trying to set it up so that I look, ego's involved, I'm trying to be profound, come up with all these Dharma goals. And really, when it came down to it, this practice, the precepts are all very personal. They change all the time. We're in this flow, and you can teach a precept, and then you can come next year and teach that same precept, and it's all different, you know. I mean, it's kind of the same, but you're not the same, and that changes, and that's how I feel about it. So, I got nothing else to say. I don't know what time it is, but that's as far as I got with it. And it certainly isn't an ending to anything for me. The study of precepts was really, that was kind of the start. And in the Rinzai tradition, they don't study the precepts. It's considered a koan. And really, when you dig down in there, it really is a, it's hard to pin down. And it's a great way to frame your life, to make that the framework for how you live your life. And it'll change who you are, and it won't be because you're trying to change. It just does change you. And you turn around and you think you're the same person, and people say, no, you're kind of different. In a good way, of course. But so what is it you say, Domio? Any thoughts, questions, insights?
Any questions or comments?
Yeah, that's the one, yeah. We'll go with that. I'm not saying I got any answers, but you could definitely ask the questions.
Thank you, Richard.
You bet.
Richard, I think I liked the part where you put things in your own words towards the end of what you were saying, and also your emphasis on Sangha. You know, I did this little exercise once around writing my own eulogy, which is a really interesting thing to try. It makes you think about, how do you really want to be remembered? You know, how, and it's not like, you know, things like, oh, I did XYZ in my career or whatever like that. It's always about people, right? And so for me, your emphasis on Sangha resonated. That's something I'm still, you know, relatively new at here, and working on a little bit here and there. But I think it's a really important aspect to what you said today. So thanks for that.
You bet. Yeah, yeah. It's I always call myself a recovering introvert, because it takes me a long time to get comfortable with people. And I know when I first came to Brightway, and I'd be driving home and going, oh man, I just like, oh, I don't know, this, who are all these people? How do I deal with, you know? And it's like, I don't know, maybe I'm not going to go back. And you know, the weird thing, the mystery of all this is, there I was. It's Tuesday. I'm in my car. I'm driving out there. I go, what are you doing? What is this? Why are you going back again? You know, it's like, nobody even knows you're there. I mean, but there you are. And then you show up again. So much of it, this practice is you just showing up. Just being there.
No. Or Richard, this is Bruce.
Bruce.
Hey, no, hey, wait a minute. It's a good thing we're not in the Zendo right now.
So yeah, right.
You said that
when Bruce is my good buddy.
Precepts look different to you every year when you look at them. How is this one different, and how did you change in your relationship to it?
You know, it's interesting, and I'm really. So many things happen, and it's such a mystery. You know, you couldn't make it. I said, okay, we'll switch and all that. And I, you know, I kind of, don't be stingy. I thought, you know, I could nail that one real easy. Truthfully, that's why I took it. I thought, oh no, that's, I can get that one whipped together. No problem. There's the ego, right? Oh yeah, no problem. But then I started digging into this thing, and you know, it became so personal. It was like this was like a whole, this was the whole thing. This is my practice. This is, this is Zen. This is Buddhism. It was all together in this little nutshell here. And and who knows? I mean, I couldn't even remember this one. I mean, I knew it was in there someplace, and I didn't really, I probably didn't really understand it that much, you know. And I think a lot of, you know, a lot of precept is, you don't, until you're faced with that
right
situation, that it's staring you in the face, it's just words, it's just something you read, and it sounds good, yeah, I can do that, and it's, but when you're faced face to face with, then it becomes something else. Of course, you're not going to, the situation's always going to be different. You know, the moment passes, another moment comes along. How are you going to deal with it? What's it going to be? You know, it's so.
You know. Aren't they all just summarized under the first pure precept, though, of do no harm?
Yeah, I mean, you can. It is a hell of a koan when you come down, right, the whole yeah thing. I mean, it's, yeah, there's a general. It was like Aitken's, that first paragraph, it was like, well, that's pretty complete. What do I need to say about this, you know? I mean, he's nailed it, but kind of. But then, it's you got that surface, and it's all, you know, you've got to kind of nail down, you know, you've intellectual compartmentalized it, conceptualized it. It's there. I've got it. Then drop below that. And when you drop below that, then it becomes all sorts of different things. And you're not holding on to it so tight, you know, you let it go. And that's what I meant when it's not to lock it away, not to put it in the prison of my conceptualization, not to put it in that construct where, you know, we build it up. This is what it is. Now I understand it. Not understanding it's a good thing. or holding it loosely. I put it that way, holding it loosely. What is it? Opening the hand of thought. You know, let go of it. That's what I meant, I guess.
Okay. Thank you.
Long answer to a short question. Yeah.
I'll see you at Sesame Donuts tomorrow.
Okay.
Richard, I have a question for you. I know that you have been in Sangha with this group for some time, and I'm just wondering if that affects your relationship. I'm wondering about if your relationship, the relationship of the Sangha to your practice, to the Buddha part and to the Dharma part, if that has changed as we've had to socially distance. Has your relationship to the Sangha changed, or has the way the Sangha has influenced your practice changed?
Wow, good question. I'm sure it is, and I can't really say exactly how it does. I mean, this whole thing has just turned my world upside down. I mean, it's realistically, this pandemic is really, I mean, my practice takes off in this whole environment, because now I'm, every day I'm like facing something else. And and it's like, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it's, yeah, Zoom's okay. I know you're up. I have an iPad, so I got to switch back and forth to see who's who. And, And it's good, you know, and we sit together and we meditate together. And I guess I kind of feel that, but it's not the same, you know. And Sangha does have it does have an effect on my practice, but I went to another session with the Empty Field up in Eugene, and they all go around afterwards and you have your parting words or whatever, and it just occurred to me, this could be my Sangha. I mean, I sat with these people, didn't say a word all week long. But the reality is we were all practicing together than that. So it's, I kind of don't think of having two Sanghas. It's just all Sangha, you know. And those people in Eugene are Sangha. And when I'm sitting at Dharma reading, that's Sangha, you know. So it doesn't really get parsed out, I guess, that way. I guess that my fantasy is that someday everybody in the world's going to be my Sangha, right? I mean, gosh, wouldn't that be something? But it's going to be a long time before I get there. There's too many people I want to exclude. That's my problem, and I have to work with that, so... I don't know if I answered that question or not.
No, thank you. That was beautiful.
Well, Richard, you're mentioning going to the Zendo. Makes me think of that question. I mean, how has Sangha changed now? And it occurs to me that how it's changed or what we're missing is really completely beyond words, because it's not about words. It's right. When I'm physically present in the Zendo, I didn't go there, I didn't think about it. Like, right. I see all of you, we sit together, we chant together. It's good. You know what I mean? There's nothing missing.
It works.
But when I go to the Zendo and I'm physically in that space and I look at the, you know, cushions and the benches and the chairs and the altar and just, you know, there's the physical memory of being there with everyone, that suddenly then I just feel this great sense of loss and sadness and grief that, like, you know, and it's like, I can't, it's not something up here. It's something,
yeah, you know, that... Yeah, it's there's so much that ends up down in your gut and your hara, you know, and it's just...
I mean, there's no use sitting here lamenting what we don't have, but other hand, I do think it's valuable to just recognize, you know, the impact that these changes are having on us.
I got to say, it was really bizarre to, and I used my Insight timer on my phone. So, that kind of lacked a little something, but that was okay. But then after the bell to end the session, it was just like, I was almost kind of depressed. I mean, there you are. I mean, where is everybody? I was like, dang, when the hell is this going to be over? When can I? And part of me just says, well, there's something, you know, it's changed. Mm-hmm. It's changed, and it's always changing. And I guess that's part of what you got to wake up to, you know. And I don't know. I think it's very fertile ground for our practice right now. It's just, you just get sucked in. If you turn the TV off, you just get sucked into this moment and what's happening. I actually see good things happening. I mean, it's weird. Not all the pandemic stuff. And also, too, what's my relationship with this coronavirus? You know, it's a living entity, right? It's part of the Dharma. This whole thing is that, you know, that was the other thing I had thought of. I kind of forgot. I throw this out. I lost my place on there, but isn't COVID-19, isn't that part of the Dharma too? You know, that's at work there too. So, you know, how do you hold that? How do you encompass that as part of your practice? So, lots of questions. I don't have many answers.
I can't help but feel that there are things on these Zoom calls, and you know, I have my gripes with them. I mean, I think I have the world's worst chair. my chair every now and then just drops a little bit, and then I have to pop it back up, and then it'll drop again, right? You know. And gosh, I don't know how the people who work at home can stand it. I used to be a full-time telecommuter for a long time. But, you know, when I have a Zoom call with another community or other friends, and then I have a Brightway Zen call, it's like, God, I can't do another one. So I have all of those complaints, yet at the same time, I am interacting with people on the call in a way that I know I would not at the Zendo, particularly when we have our little 15-minute tea break. I mean, I get to have a conversation with two or three other people that I might go 2 or 3 weeks and I'd see them, but I wouldn't get a chance to talk to them. Not to mention the idea I really resonate with, which is being an introvert in recovery. You know, I might just sit in a little corner waiting for the 15 minutes to go by. And then the bell rings and we get to go back into the Zendo again, and we don't have that option here.
Yeah.
So it's got some sangha building benefits.
Yeah, it's just different.
Yeah,
it's just different. It's you know, the one thing this whole thing, this pandemic has taught me is that I can't go. And, you know, I mean, we've talked about it a lot of times, that a lot of our Zen things point to it, that, you know, it's in this moment that we live. And there's no idea of what's going to be after all this. I mean, everybody's go back to normal, go back to this. Maybe there isn't this isn't going to be there. This is going to be different. So, you know, and that's good. Is good or bad or whatever. It's going to be something else. And, you know, it doesn't bother me. That's the weird thing. It just, okay, it's going to be different. That's okay. So, I kind of feel that maybe that's part of this practice. That's what it does to me. You know, I can be there.
Yeah, Richard, I was in a workshop on handling anxiety as a Buddhist this weekend. And one of the things they pointed out was that they asked us to list everything we've lost. And there've been a lot of losses. You know, can't go out, can't go shopping, can't go to Zendo. But what about the gifts? What have we gained? And I think that's what this is talking about.
Yeah.
You know, a certain kind of intimacy that we get through this medium. Lots of time to ponder things, to do stuff, to read things that we wouldn't have read otherwise. And, you know, everybody has their own list, but.
Right. I found myself changing how I operate as far as, you know, I can't take too much more Netflix. It's just like, okay. I'll get halfway through something and go, oh, God. No, I'm done. What am I doing? You know, it's just like, oh, you just can't take those distractions anymore. I mean, it just doesn't work. It's all those things that work for you, they don't work anymore. So, you know, I think it's kind of good. Except for being in the garden, that always works for me. I get out there, get in the garden, and it's kind of my meditation. So,
Adine, you raised your hand. Do you want to just unmute yourself? You're still muted. Adine, you're still muted. Can you unmute yourself?
Oh, there we go.
Sorry. Yeah, Shoketsu was talking about some of the good things and about this. And that's something that sort of amazed me because it's good for this person and it's also good for the earth. It's a person that I knew in England who was originally from Northern India and has lived there. For 40 years, 40 years, and just now is realizing that you can see the Himalayas from his house. Can you imagine 40 years? Nobody's out, everybody's in lockdown. And so there aren't the cars going and the factories and like that. And he said they're absolutely beautiful. And something that Richard said I thought was good too, you know, about going back to normal, because that's one of the things Raj wrote, is he said, look at this beautiful mountains. And he said, I don't want to go back to quote unquote normal.
Right.
I want to be able to see these beautiful mountains every morning.
Yeah,
that's my only remark on.
No, it's true. I mean, what was it? I was watching something where in Venice they can actually see that there's fish in the Venice canals, whereas before they couldn't even see through the water. And you know, our air around here is so much better. And you know, when we quit hammering the environment, it just like just cleans up, and it's just like, wow, you don't want this? You want to go back? You know, I have a weird perspective though. I'm retired, and so I have to keep reminding myself that I come from a certain viewpoint of not having to confront a lot of things that other people are confronting. So I have a hard time trying to deal with that sometimes, to have that equanimity to hold their suffering and to see it. So, anyway, that's going off some other direction.
I would just like to thank you, Richard. It was wonderful to hear from you tonight. And I wanted to, this was the last night of the precept Tuesdays, and I just wanted to thank everybody so much. When Jomyo was talking about the precept class, and I thought, oh, this will be great. Jomyo is such a wonderful teacher, and I love her take on everything. And then she said, well, Little's going to be taught by the people who have taken it. And I thought, I was a little bit like, oh. And then it's just been a really wonderful experience. I feel like I've gotten to know everybody just a little bit, and just hearing from everybody. It's been a real gift. So thank you, Domio, for delegating, and thank you everybody for all your effort and kindness and wisdom. Thank you.
Absolutely, I agree.
Zoom hands.
Domio, I had some kind of issue. I couldn't get any video. I'm not sure I even have audio now, but it said the host turned off my video and I could not get it going again. So just a technical little glitch.
Huh.
I'm getting a message that the host wants me to unmute myself.
Yeah, so did I.
Bob, are you doing any of that?
Yes, actually, I just unmuted everybody. I didn't realize that a message would go out.
The world of Zoom. Ah!
And then it tells me it wants you to turn your video back on. And I went, okay. So.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to Claudia's video, so I asked her to turn it back on. Huh. I knew she was on before, and then it just kind of vanished. I don't know what happened.
It did. Yeah, I got a little message saying the host was turning me on.
Oh. You know, we're doing pretty good considering all this technology.
We've only been invaded once.
We have.
Yeah, right. We got the full experience, and now I had to do it again.
All right, well, 9 o'clock. Thank you all for spending the evening with Sangha. Thank you, Richard. And thank like you, Linda said, all thank the people you, who taught
thank
classes.
You.
Thank you, Richard.
Good job, Richard.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job, Richard.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye, Sarah.
Bye.
Bye.